All right. Well, the Supreme Court went into session, their fall session, yesterday, and really a banner day already. Justice Thomas was not able to go because he was ill. That's pretty incredible, especially when you consider that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who has been so sick. She, by contrast, according to the Washington Post, is full of vim and vigor and was all over the arguments. That doesn't mean Justice Thomas won't be part of the arguments. It's just he wasn't there on the first day. And then, of course, we have the whole interplay between the impeachment march that happened yesterday on the first anniversary of Kavanaugh's confirmation hearing, where, in fact, I think 14 members of Congress want to impeach Judge Kavanaugh. We have all kinds of complications. And in addition to that, we have the court deciding some of the most momentous decisions, really, in our lifetime, all in one session, fall session. Gail Trotter is an attorney based in D.C. She's a frequent political analyst on television and radio. You've seen her. And I've asked Gail to join us this morning. She wrote an article with Carrie Severino for Fox News about this. And Gail has her finger on the pulse and a lot of insight. So, Gail, thanks for joining me this morning.
Good to be with you, Sandy.
All right, so there's a lot to say. I sort of gave a sketch. Before we get into the actual cases, Gail, just some other observations from you about what makes this particular configuration of the Supreme Court 2019 in October interesting. That's, I guess, the most innocuous word I could use. What are the variables that you see?
Sure. Well, it is interesting because we have a full-strength court, which is the first full term since Justice Kavanaugh was confirmed to the Supreme Court. You might remember last year his confirmation was delayed and he wasn't confirmed right before the beginning of the term. So he came in, I guess, about a week after the term had started. So this, for court observers, is very interesting because this will be the first full term that Justices Kavanaugh and Gorsuch are able to completely take part in all of the cases before the Supreme Court.
Hey, Gail, let me interject another question. Some are speculating, those that are, you know, on the left and on the right, too, that the court, because of what you just described and because of the way in which Kavanaugh was confirmed, that horrible ordeal we all went through together, that the court really was not, the decisions they made were not a good example of what we're going to get, what we are going to get in this October session, that conservatives now on the court have an opportunity to really weigh in on some key issues, and all eyes are focused. Do you think that there was more caution because of the circumstances that you just described?
Certainly there is speculation about that, Sandy, but I think that those justices were such professionals that they wouldn't alter their judicial philosophy or legal reasoning based on those types of outside influences. And I think you raise a really important point. We are watching what the court is going to do this term, and the reason why conservatives supported Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh wasn't so that they would start delivering so-called conservative political results by their decisions, but so that they would be faithful to the law, faithful to the Constitution. And we are going, I think, to start seeing the direction of that. Carrie Severino, who is the president of the Judicial Crisis Network, has done a lot of talking on this, and she says it's even affecting the liberal side of the court because now they're having to look at originalist philosophy in making their arguments about the decisions that the court should make. So I think you're seeing a philosophical switch from the court led by these justices who are very faithful to the Constitution. Obviously, Justice Thomas has been doing this for decades, but now he's getting some support in this type of judicial philosophy as well.
I know that one of our big concerns, I'll say mine and I think yours too, Gail, is that Justice Roberts is so eager. He even says publicly how eager he is that the court not be political, which we're glad for that, all the reasons you just stated. But it's as though he has no real guiding philosophy other than to make sure that his court does not appear to be political. Is that an unfair assessment?
I think that he has said so himself, and people who have read through the tea leaves of his decisions and trying to understand psychologically where he is have reflected on the fact that he does seem to place a very high value on the institution of the Supreme Court and the federal judiciary. And like you say, in general, that's a good idea, but you don't want to elevate that to such a level that you do not follow the judicial philosophy that you should have and that you end up changing your votes, which we believe is what happened in the original Obamacare Supreme Court decision. It was seen that Chief Justice Roberts, from some reporting, had changed his vote from the initial conference meeting. And we saw that the summer, too, in the census case. So it is good to respect the institution of the Supreme Court, but that shouldn't dictate and guide what result the Supreme Court comes to on any given issue, because that is what the Supreme Court is supposed to do. It's supposed to resolve these issues, not based on political policy preferences of the justices, but on the rule of law and the Constitution.
This is not a new story, and yet I think this is the time to repeat it. There have been veiled threats to the Supreme Court over the summer from Democratic senators, which also adds a wrinkle here. Gail, explain that.
Sandy, I'm so glad you brought that up. We are seeing unprecedented attacks on the independence of our federal judiciary, particularly the Supreme Court. We have seen so many of the Democratic presidential candidates floating the idea of packing the court, which, if you're not familiar with that, it means adding more people to the number of total justices on the Supreme Court with an eye to getting different results. FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, proposed this in the 1930s when he was trying to push through a lot of federal legislation that really switched the balance of power to the central government. And there was a threat to pack the court at that time. Then the court changed the decisions it was making, and it was not implemented. But it was a failure back then, and it should be a failure now as well. So that's one attempt. Then we saw a friend of the court brief that was filed by Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island and several other senators in this very important Second Amendment case out of New York City. And he also made the point in this brief that if the court didn't rule essentially the way that Senator Whitehouse and his compatriots wanted, then there would be a restructuring of the court. So we're seeing that going on as well. And then thirdly, you're seeing continued attacks by the media to intimidate not only Justice Kavanaugh through the New York Times bad reporting that they had to correct, but also it's a deterrent to good people who might be on the short list for not only the Supreme Court, but also the lower courts, which is where you draw from to come up with excellent, exceptional candidates to the Supreme Court. And those people watching what is continuing to go on with Justice Kavanaugh certainly have to take that into account if they were to be selected to be put forward for nomination.
Gail, do you think, now this is really personal opinion and observation, but do you think Justice Kavanaugh has recovered from that ordeal? Or do you agree that part of his, I think, timidity, I think maybe we didn't expect such timidity, has come from he's just like gun shy, he's like shell shocked. That's my assessment. I don't know if you would agree with that.
I know that he served as the judge on the D.C. Circuit for 12 years, so being a judge is nothing new to him, and I think he's such a professional that he can rise above these considerations. Obviously, it was traumatizing to him, his family, and his friends, and that there's a continued effect from that, but I don't think it affects his performance as a judge, but certainly when he was challenged on this, he continued his practice of a point of selecting all female law clerks to work with him on the Supreme Court. And I feel like that was a response to his critics. I'm not going to change the things that I think are right just because you decided to go after me and my family. And Justice Kavanaugh was lauded by the women that he worked with as, you know, a supervising judge, the students that he worked with as a professor, adjunct professor at many of these law schools. And I see that he has been consistent in following through on his character and his practice of, you know, being a judge and the way that he saw his judicial philosophy. So I think that that has not changed based on that traumatizing situation. But even the very left justice, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, said that the way that he was treated and how politically charged these confirmation hearings have become is terrible, and we need to get away from that. So I think these attacks that you're seeing from people on the left go far beyond even what the leftmost member of the Supreme Court would think is reasonable behavior.
Gail, there are so many cases, and now here we are up against the clock, but let's talk about the most important or significant cases you think are coming before the court, even if we can't do many details on them.
Sure. So there's a very important religious liberty case dealing with a Blaine Amendment in Montana, which is talking about whether or not there can be funding of education that has a religious aspect to it, which implicates the First Amendment. We have the most important Second Amendment case since D.C. versus Heller was decided in 2008. I referenced it earlier in our discussion, Sandy, talking about whether or not you can transport a legal firearm from your home to another home or to a shooting range outside of New York City. We also have some very important cases that have been consolidated on the DACA executive order by President Obama that was reversed by executive order by President Trump because it was the Obama executive order was seen as unlawful. And then we have some cases on Title VII trying to determine whether the phrase because of sex refers to male, female, or if it also includes people of different sexual orientations or transgender people too. So those are the ones that everybody should be watching this term.
Yeah, and those the cases that come under that Title VII, which is that definition of whatever sex because of sex, whatever that means, we need to be clear that under the Obama administration, they extended that to mean, you know, whatever sexual orientation, whatever you thought you were, transgender rights, all of that. And so there are several cases, one in particular, that is kind of hinging on that. Also, I see that it's possible that this case, that it seems to me Ken Cuccinelli was the one that kind of spearheaded this, the challenge to the Affordable Care Act may actually end up in the Supreme Court again. What do you know about that?
Right. Well, as you know, the Obamacare legislation took over 1/6 of the economy, and many challenges on all the different aspects of it have continued to rise up to percolate through the lower courts. So many of them are super, super specific, and this one deals with risk corridors, which is very technical on the healthcare aspect. But it just goes to show that the legislation that was pushed through Congress through lots of tricks and dishonesty continues to have ramifications for regular Americans' healthcare continuing many, many years after this legislation was passed, and we're seeing the effects of that. So I don't think that the challenges to Obamacare are going anywhere, and you're going to continue to see the ramifications that affect everyone's health care from this.
You know, one thing we see with John Roberts is that his court, I'll call it that, is the tendency to make half decisions, like not to really make a final decision, to send it back to courts, and so things keep having to come back. And what this will be the third time that the Affordable Care Act will come back before them, which seems very much a waste of effort and time. There's an abortion case, too, that we didn't talk about. I'll just say 30 seconds on that, the abortion case coming up.
Sure, that's a Louisiana case dealing with a regulation by the state saying that abortion providers have to have admitting privileges at hospitals near the clinic. So this is one to watch as well.
Yeah, big cases, really big cases. And given the chaos we described before we went into the particulars, people can understand why the courts are so important. And so, by the way, Carrie Severino and Gail both wrote this article in the Fox News on the Supreme Court. We'll post that on our Facebook page so that you can read and share it. Gail Trotter, thank you. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much for your help this morning.
Always great to be with you, Sandy.
All righty. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.